Hey guys, what's up? It is week 344. I'm here to review a bunch of stuff for you. A big update, some more Black Friday stuff coming in, whatnot. So the first one up is from Severn Films. This is a 4K release of the 1970 film Count Dracula. Now, this is directed by Jess Franco. This is unrelated to the Hammer films. Of course, it does star Christopher Lee. So that's kind of confusion, right? So there was 9 Hammer Draculas, 7 of which had Christopher Lee, and then the only 2 that didn't were Brides of Dracula and the Legend of the 7 Golden Vampires. So Jess Franco is a pretty prolific director, of course. He worked with Christopher Lee several times, and this one is actually produced by Harry Allen Towers, who also worked with Jess Franco quite a bit. So their main goal here when they made Count Dracula in 1969, released in 1970, and then a bunch of different years throughout the years later on, United States 70, whatever, they as the 70s progressed, they got released in more territories, but their goal was to kind of be as close to the Bram Stoker novel as they could be. That's how they got Christopher Lee to agree to do this film, as he was obviously tired of doing the Hammer Draculas, but this time he actually could say the lines from the book. So this film has an amazing cast. It's actually probably one of the best cast Dracula movies if you look at it. Who you got playing in here? Of course, Christopher Lee as the titular character. And then you have Herbert Lahm as Van Helsing, which is excellent. Klaus Kinski as Renfield. You got, Maria Rome, who's in a bunch of Jess Franco films, including Venus in First. Soledad Miranda in one of her only roles, unfortunately. She is kind of a cult icon figure because of her tragic death and her screen presence, which was amazing. You also have Paul Mueller, who is a Jess Franco regular. He's in a slew of these films. So you have a really nice cast in this film. And of course, Jack Taylor, who's in a bunch of Jess Franco movies and a slew of other films as well, as Quincy Morris. So I've always been a big fan of this one. In 1970, we actually covered 1970 as a retro year for 22 Shots, and we watched over 100 horror and horror adjacent films for 1970, and Count Dracula made my top 10. It was one of 3 Herbert Lahm movies to make my top 10 of the year. Herbert Lahm is an MVP in this movie. He's excellent. He's great in the whole year of 1970, of course. The score is actually by Bruno Nicolodi. Nicolai, who worked a lot with, Ennio Morricone. And there's like the big 3 that always worked together and composed each other and helped out. So like, it's really an amazing group of people coming together to make this kind of a Dracula film, which is weird. So as far as the original Blu-ray release and DVD release of this film, Count Dracula, it never looked particularly great. Severin basically said that, we worked with what we had. So when it came to the 4K, I was just kind of curious what it would look like, and it looks amazing. They did an excellent job with this movie. Picture quality is great, sound quality is excellent, and the features are really plentiful. There's so many features on here, which is so much to shake a stick at. So basically, this does follow the story of Dracula. In the very beginning, we have Jonathan Harker going there to help lawyer up with Dracula and fix out a place in Britain. And we follow that story fairly close for a while. We do deviate a little. And not completely. It's one of the closer Draculas, to be honest. And I know people would say, well, what about Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula? And I found it very funny listening to the special features and commentary that Jess Franco had the same complaints about that movie that I did as a young kid. Now, while watching it, the first 5 minutes, of course it's called, Bram Stoker's Dracula. And it's like the first 3 minutes, he kind of deviates from the story so much that it's not really, right? He's making it a love story. And Dracula was never really a love story, right? Count Dracula is evil. So it was always weird to me. So this one is more in frame with that. Christopher Lee's excellent in this movie. Like I said, he gets to deliver the Dracula lines. Some of the camera work chosen by Jess Franco is questionable, but for the most part, it's pretty solid. Klaus Kinski shines. Herbert Lahm shines. Soledad Miranda is great. Jack Taylor's great. Everybody in this movie is really well cast, from Dr. Seward to Van Helsing. And the movie itself is a really solid a take on trying to make a serious Dracula film that follows a novel. And the novel is incredibly long. It's told in journals, so it's not exactly the easiest one to do. But there's small little details that are in here that aren't in any other adaptation, like the baby in the sack and the way the brides work and a lot of things like that. It does speed things up. It does change some geographical locations and things like that. But anyways, it's an excellent release for an excellent Dracula film. And if you're a Jess Franco hater, if you don't really, you've seen his latter day stuff and you're not familiar, check out some of his 60s and 70s stuff. If you're looking at Awful Dr. Orloff or anything like that, Venus in Furs, Vampiros Lesbos, which he made right after this, She Killed in Ecstasy. These movies are just much more different than his latter day films like Oasis of the Zombies, although I do enjoy some of them as well. But as far as the special features are concerned, there's a bunch here, guys. And I went through as many as I could get through. I got through most of them, I think. So the first disc, we of course have the UHD, which looks excellent. And we have audio commentary with horror historian David Duvall and actress Maria Rome. And that's great. They do it over Skype, so there is some interrupting here and there. But David Duvall is a massive historian on classic actors. He knew a lot of these guys. He knew Herbert Lom and all these people. So he's sitting there talking to Maria Rahm about her experiences with all these actors and everything like that, and talking about the sets. And it's just really great. And she has very funny stories about Jess Franco, saying Jess really wasn't that funny. She was married to Harry Allen Towers, the producer, who had a direct line or tie into Bram Stoker because Harry Allen Towers' dad knew Bram Stoker personally. So it's all this interesting, great stuff like that. So tons of stories like that. And as we get to disc two, we have an illustrated 1973 Christopher Lee audio interview with filmmaker David Glut. Love Christopher Lee talking about any of this stuff. He's very, very clever, very intelligent man, very educated, very full of charisma. The Love Count interview with director Jess Franco. Handsome Harker interview with actor Fred Williams. An interview with actor Jack Taylor, which you gotta love, who also did set designs and stuff on this film, which we learned. Stakeholders, an appreciation by filmmaker Christoph Gans, who directed, he worked on Necronomicon and a bunch of other horror films, or cult films, I should say. And then disc three, we have Dracula Barcelona, which is a 2017 documentary, which is basically kind of talking about the movies that Jess Franco made in Spain at the time under, you know, the cult dictator Franco. And there's a really funny thing that that Christopher Lee is quoted at or says in there, where he says, "I find it very funny that we have the two most powerful men in Spain being Jesus and Franco, and the director here is Jesus Franco." He's named after the two most powerful men in Spain at the time who had the most influence, which is funny because Jess Franco is literally this like sexually like outward person with his films and everything like that. Not sexually repressed, and you look at Spain at the time and it was very sexually repressed because the dictator and the Catholicism and everything, and Jess Franco is like the anti of that. And it's genius that he has both these people's names. And it didn't, obviously, Christopher Lee pointed that out and thought it was very, you know, interesting. Also, we get to hear Christopher Lee explain, you know, what Dracula means. Son of dragon, son of dragon of the night, which is really great to hear. And I love how he explains. There's also tons of other people being interviewed in here, people that work with Jess on other films, all this kind of stuff. And we see just how everything was. And you get Jess is interviewed in here as well in a 1999 interview. When did he die? He died in what, 2013 or something like that? I can't remember 100%. No, actually, probably later than that. I can't remember. But as far as well, we also have a Jess Franco's Bram Stoker Count Dracula, Stephen Thrower on Count Dracula, 45 minutes of Stephen Thrower talking about Count Dracula. He's one of the world's most known experts on Jess Franco. So there we go. In the Land of Franco bonus sequence with Alan Petit and Stephen Thrower, he tells a very funny story about Christopher Lee as well, speaking in perfect French, as you would expect. So, like, yeah, this is really excellent stuff. Very, if you like the movie, it's a wealth of information about it. If you like Jess Franco, also a lot of information about it. And if you never seen it, I would recommend it. I am a big fan of Dracula, Hammer films, and, of course, you know, Christopher Lee and Herbert Lom and all these people, Klaus Kinski, Saul Dan Miranda. So it's just really nice to see all these people in one movie like this. And it's just one of Jess Franco's best efforts, honestly. I think so, personally. And on 4K, it looks gorgeous. And I'm just dying. It's so crazy that we don't have The Abyss of True Lies Burial, not even really on Blu-ray, but we have a 4K of Count Dracula from 1970. That goes to show you that horror lives forever, right? Anyways, great stuff from Severn. The next one we're going to talk about is from SRS, and this is from 1985, and this is a Mark and John Polonia movie. That's right. The Polonia brothers, who would go on to do, Splatter Farm and a handful of other Sartorians, but Church of the Damned is their first film they directed from 1985, and this is originally thought to be lost, but I believe the brother who's still alive is Mark. John passed away a few years ago, so basically maybe like six or so. What happened is he kind of put it together and completed completed the film. And these next three movies are all going to be kind of dirty and cheap and a little bit of shaky talking about them because they're anthologies or they're low budget, they're kind of backyard stuff. But basically, the Polonia brothers were a pair of brothers in the Pennsylvania area, I believe, and they made a bunch of low budget movies. They made some gore films. Splatter Farm was probably the biggest one that they had released. They did Hallucinations, Bad Magic. They did a lot of films. And I was listening to Sick on Cinema, and they were doing a Polonia Brothers. I was like, I got a couple of those. I'll pop in and watch a couple Polonia Brothers I haven't seen. So here we start with Church of the Damned from 85. So this is like dirt cheap shot on video stuff, right? No budget stuff. And basically, the Polonia Brothers and their friends are playing like detectives, and they're like 15 years old. But what you got to say is it's about a cult kind of going around and like killing people and taking hearts. It's very much like the Hearts of Darkness movie that Visual Vengeance put out, except much more low budget, much more made by backyard kids and just having fun. But while I will say about this, you know, sometimes you can see that amount of energy that these people have, and the Polonia brothers have it. They have that spark in their early stuff. You just see it. And then sometimes you'll see like some low budget SOV stuff where they made this movie when they were 15, 16, and there's nothing there. You know, I don't want to pick it. Yeah, I mean, like, because Nigel the Psychopath is one that I don't care for. They went on to do, Butt Crack, which is very funny. And there's another one, Garden Tool Massacre, Shed, that SRS put out, which I don't see much in. But this one, you can see, like, the sparks. Then again, he edited it probably later, so it's maybe a little better. But you see the sparks of the gore, and there's nonstop, there's ambition. It's just a lot of fun. For a low-budget movie, watching kids throw back a blood all over their backyard, it's ambitious. There's a lot of gore, and it's surprising, and it's well done for what it is. I was just like, well, this is much better than a lot of their contemporaries at this age, and I was happy with it. I mean, it's so funny to watch something like Church of the Damned now and just be like, oh, wow, that's cute and fun, and then go pop in like a low-budget movie made by a 40-year-old guy. Like something I would make, like Slimy the Bastard. Dave, those effects look like shit. What the fuck were you thinking? And it's just like, did 15-year-old kids just like make better effects than me? I think they did. But, you know, I'm just saying, and there's a lot more independent movies that just don't seem to give a shit now. And these guys, when you're young and have that life for it, they sure did. And Church of the Damned shows that. It's fun. It's not like some amazing masterpiece. It's an SOV movie made by 6-17-year-olds in their backyard. It's gory. It's fun. It is what it is. It's the satanic panic bullshit that we all love, right? Okay, the next one here from the Polonia Brothers in SRS is Death Reel. And this is an anthology. This is a bunch of shorts that they made from the early to mid-80s that essentially they shot a new wraparound on, and somebody kind of finds these lost reels, this film collector, and he pops them in and he watches them. And that's kind of basically how the anthology works. It's a very common kind of structure for a lot of anthologies now. Hey, we got the VHS, since VHS. We got these lost tapes, or we got this weird, this television program, yada, 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 whatever it is, to kind of tie these together. I got to say, the wraparound was made recently. It's pretty terrible. Not to be rude, but it's just not good. It's just very, very haphazardly done. As far as the shorts are concerned, they range. They're not as memorable. If you look at something like Church of the Damned, that stands out, and you're like, this is a lot of fun. This is cool. These are just kind of a little bit more goofy. They don't take themselves as seriously as Church of the Damned. They're definitely a little bit more, I guess I would say, experimental. They are gory. They are goofy. It's all in there. I do not have that much to say about Death Reel. But one of them is very silly because it's like kind of like on the water, and there's a stupid punchline at the very end, which is ridiculous. And there's a lot of them that are just more comical, more dancing. There's literally like a dance one where somebody's just dancing the whole time killing people. I would say that if you're going to stick with one of these two, I would go with Church of the Damned. But if you're really a big Polonia Brothers fan and you kind of want to see him at a super young age running around with the cameras and everything, then I would probably check this out. But I would say, you know, if you guys ever watch like early Tim Ritter stuff like Day of the Reaper or something like that, I wouldn't say it's as quality as like Twisted Illusions, but it's kind of in the vein of something like that, but you know, it's more in the vein of the one I'm going to talk about next, although that one I think's better. I just think Church of the Damned, a lot of them were made a couple years later, and I think it really shows their improvement. So if you were like looking to check these out, this one is earlier, so maybe watch this one before Church of the Damned. I would recommend Church of the Damned. This one, I would say, I don't know, maybe not, but it's all right. You know what it is? They're made by kids, and if you're a big fan, then it's kind of a must, right? Death Reel. Okay, the next one up is by Todd Sheets. And this is an anthology by Todd Sheets, early films, SOV stuff, Sheets of Gore. This is about 96 minutes long. So this is original and uncensored shorts compiled into one feature. Yeah, so there we go here. You gotta love Todd Sheets here. Todd Sheets would go on to direct Dreaming Neon Purple and House of Forbidden Secrets. But I first was introduced to Todd Sheets with stuff like Zombie Bloodbath when I was a kid. He directed the trilogy there. He directed Goblin, Dead Thing, Shivers, Violent New Breed. Todd Sheets was directing movies in what, Missouri? Is it Kansas City, Missouri? Or somewhere around, I believe so, for years. For years and years and years. And he took a hiatus and he had some health problems and then he came back strong with the movies I mentioned earlier and Bone Hill Road and all that stuff. So it was nice for SRS to put this out a while ago. And it is this anthology of all his little shorts on here. Like, not an anthology, they're just played back to back, 96 minutes of fucking shorts. And they start off, I'm not going to remember every single one of them. There's three, Blood of the Undead movies on here, in the beginning, the middle, and then there's one at the very end. And they range, I think they go in chronological order. And they do get better. So what I'll say about this is they are goofy, they are funny, and I did notice that some of the acting in the early, like the later shorts, is better acting than some of the more modern day Todd Sheets movies, which is funny because I mean like some of the acting in this is better from the kids than in Moonchild, which is a Todd Sheets movie. So it's just crazy to think that like a lot of these kids were so gung ho about it, they're so into it. Of course, it's a lot of young kids just playing way adult roles. I mean, there's ones of escape mental patients going on a killing spree through the street. There's one kind of street trash style story that even has the blue like puke gore, and there's one decapitation in here. It looks straight out of Bad Taste. So you see all his kind of like influences worn directly on his sleeve with the zombies and everything. It's Romero. So like Todd Sheets was always a lover of horror films, and this is no different. This was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with this. We have a kind of the longest one being like this hillbilly kind of Hicks one where it's kind of like a redneck zombies kind of backwoods kind of thing. They're not zombies, but you know, you get that idea, right? I'll maybe put it more in line with what is that one by John McBride, right? Or something like Lunch Meat, right? The 87 one. But in that kind of vein, right? Wood Chipper Massacre. No, it's not Wood Chipper. It was the other. Cannibal Camp Out. There we go. Cannibal Camp Out or Lunch Meat or something in that vein. So, like, we have zombies. We have mutants. We have vampires. We have all these. And there's tons of shorts on here. I don't even know. There's probably like 10 to 12 shorts on here. I enjoyed myself with this. It was very fun. Growing up with Todd Sheets movies, seeing this and everything like that was just a nice little kind of spin to see his early shorts. I had never seen that many of them. But yeah, Sheets of Gore. I would recommend picking this up from SRS. It's dirt cheap. $10, $15. I mean, you could do a lot worse if you like the shorts, if you like gore. The special effects are really fun. Like, they're damn good. You got people being disemboweled, too, by zombies, which rarely happens when they're alive. I mean, even Fulci didn't disembowel people when they were alive in Zombie. He did in, you know, other ones. But, I mean, Romero did, of course, in Dawn of the Dead. But here, you got some people being disemboweled alive. Good stuff. Sheets of Gore. Very fun. Okay, next up is one from Vinegar Syndrome. And how can you go wrong with the 1984 slasher classic, Fatal Games? Opens up with a beautiful music, some beautiful montage. That's right. We've been waiting forever for this bad boy to finally get a Blu-ray, and here we go, Fatal Games. One of the more fun slasher films. There's an actress in here. Sally Kirkland, I believe, is in here, which is crazy to think. It's somebody of that kind of caliber being in this, but everybody's done their slasher movies. So basically what we have here is a group of people that have qualified to kind of go into, like, the top of their line in their schools and everything like that, and then they're going to go against kids all around the state and all around the country. They basically top of their line in their state for the Olympics tryouts. And we follow about 7 kids from this school, their coach, their doctor, some nurses, all these kind of people that are involved with their life. And pretty soon you kind of learn who they are. They're fun loving, they want to have sex, all this kind of stuff. They're teenagers, but they're going for the Olympics, so testosterone. But what's funny is, like, this movie right in the very beginning is just, it's so horny. So much nudity, all this kind of stuff, and it shows a lot. Like, I was just kind of surprised how, I remember it being sleazy, but it's sleazier than I remembered in terms of nudity, especially 80s slashers are all kind of sleazy, but this one's a little bit above some of the other ones. And it does kind of remind me a bit of maybe Graduation Day, although I do find it a little bit more fun than that, and I mean, in vain of Final Exam, but probably a little bit more gory than Final Exam, I guess you'd say. Maybe not, I don't know. Or kills, for sure. But, so, this one's very funny because the killer uses a javelin. That's right. Also, this movie's infamous for the twist, which I will not spoil, and who the killer ends up being. Although, which is insane, there is a body double by Linnea Quigley in here, which is a plus. I mean, I was watching that scene, I was like, yeah, that looks very familiar. And then the actress was like, that was not my body, that was Linnea Quigley. I was like, there we go, I remember hearing that somewhere. But it's just really fun. The acting's kind of cheesy. The characters are kind of ridiculous. I love the backdrop of high stress. This is the worst doctor in the world. The worst doctor, medical doctor of all time. Is in here. He just deserves to die, and it's very funny to, like, some of the things in this movie, like, are very, like, hot topic touching situations here, like bad doctors, all this other kind of stuff, which I don't want to spoil and stuff any in here. But as far as the special features are concerned, we have a slew of them, newly scanned and restored in 4K from the 35 dupe negative. So they couldn't find the actual, you know, negative, but they found the dupe negative. A commentary track with podcaster Bill Ackerman and author Amanda Reyes, the winning touch and interview with actress Tracy Hilberg, formerly Lynn Banaschek, going for the golden interview with actor Sean Masterson, Death on the Staircase interview with Michael O'Leary, Great Day at the Office interview with actress Melissa Prophet, It's Taking Part That Counts, an interview with actress Spice Williams Crosby, Cutting Gym Class, an interview with the editor, associate producer Jonathan Brunn, archival artwork and behind-the-scenes footage, original Killing Touch title card. So, like, yeah, a lot of these people talking about it is really fun. They don't seem that bitter about it. They're just kind of like, eh, it is what it is. You know, they're not too thrilled. They're not too hating about it, but they talk about it, and they have fond memories. They talk about a lot of the other people on the set. So it's just kind of decent, like, background and stuff on there. It's not, like, the biggest revelations ever. They do mention that Sally Kirkland was not happy exactly with this movie, and I could see why to a certain extent. But this is fun, and this is another one that I think a lot of people will be very happy to check off their list from in terms of Vinegar Syndrome slasher movies or anything. It looks as good as it's ever going to look. It's not up to par with a lot of their other releases because their releases are usually immaculate. This is still good, though. It's still good. But yeah, I loved watching it, enjoyed it. There's a really stupid pool kill where you're just like, no killer would go to that depth to do that. Anyways, really enjoyed this one, Fatal Games. Okay, the next one up. I was so happy when Vinegar Syndrome put this out on the Black Friday thing. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. This is A Gun for Jennifer from 1997. I will admit, I do not love this cover art. I don't like this art at all, to be honest. I'm sure I like the artist's other work, but I am a big fan of this movie, do not like this art. So, A Gun for Jennifer was made in 1997. I became aware of this movie in the documentary that was on the Deadbeat at Dawn, the Van Beber collection from Dark Sky. And there was this Belly of the Beast documentary on there that followed Nacho Serta, these filmmakers who made this one, Jim Van Beber, and Kareem Hussein, and Richard Stanley. And it was just this amazing documentary, and I became infatuated with all the films, and I've since seen all those films on here, and Gun for Jennifer was the hardest one to track down, I believe. So when I watched it, I was kind of had this import. I was blown away by it. It's just this kind of gritty kind of movie set in New York City about a group of women who work in a strip joint who, and they're kind of like their night outing, you know, basically go out and they kill criminals in the area, men who are violent towards women, just awful pieces of shit. And the tagline says it all, dead men don't rape. So the beginning has this woman who's kind of running away from her home life. You can assume something horrible has happened. And she's about to get raped by these two muggers. And these group of women come out and they take these muggers out. They kill her. And they kill them. And they make this girl participate. So then they tell her who they are, what their MO is. And she kind of gets tied into it. Meanwhile, there is a pair of cops, this female tough cop and this new kind of cop. And she's had some trouble with her ex-partner. One of them killed on duty. And there's another pair of cops that are at each other's throats with these guys. The chief is actually Arthur, what is it, Scarsinelli. I can't think of his name. He's a character actor. He pops up in stuff like Copland, really good in Sopranos. Great character actor, very good. He's also Bringing Out the Dead. I'll fight you tomorrow. He's great. So essentially what happens is this detective gets wind of who these girls are, and she kind of has some sympathy for them, but at the same time, they're incredibly violent, and they're getting out of hand. And this is the first time I noticed the resemblance to, like, Sam Peckinpah. This is the first time, essentially, this is just the ending, the setup. It's all the Wild Bunch, right? Yeah, they got Angel. They're going in there and they're going to march into this, basically, this big old shootout. And it's an excellent shootout. It's one of my favorite shootouts. The bad guys are ruthless. They're violent. The movie's gritty. It's mean-spirited, but also just awesome slow motion. I love this movie. I think it's gritty. I think it's awesome. It's like if Abel Ferreira directed a punk rock music video written by, you know, like with a backdrop of Sam Peckinpah everywhere. You know, it's like Abel Ferreira meets Sam Peckinpah meets punk meets gritty New York City, low budget fucking, you know, nihilism. I love this movie. I just think it's great. And the ending is just really awesome too. It's not as downbeat maybe as one would think from me talking about it. But yeah, there is a great special feature on here. I just covered this movie not too long ago, but it has never been really released in the States. There's rights holding it up, and there's a reason they explain all that in the special features. Newly scanned and restored 2K from its 16 millimeter original camera negatives. Commentary track with co-writer, producer, actor Deborah Twist, and director, co-writer Todd Morris. The making of A Gun for Jennifer. 50 minutes. This is great. Brand new documentary featuring interviews with co-writer, producer, actress Deborah Swiss, co-writer, director Todd Morris, director of photography David Thumbley, actors Benja K, Joseph Paulester, Beth Dodd Boss, and Veronica Cruz, and Joe Hone. We have a trailer, 12-page booklet by Alexandria Heller-Nichols, double-sided poster. Anyways, the original cover art is always something that was something I loved. But I'm ecstatic. It was just one of them. It's a checklist, man. It's a Vinegar Syndrome archive. Get it before it sells out. One of my favorite releases of the year, honestly. And one of my all-time favorites, movies that I've just always loved. And now it's on Blu-ray, and it deserves it. And other people are going to see it, and other people are going to love it. And I'm going to hear how great it is, like I've never heard of it before. And it's going to make me laugh, but also be happy that you're seeing it too. Now, this one I just decided to watch because I felt like watching some good old Peter Jackson. And I'm tired of waiting for the fucking Blu-ray 4K, if it ever comes out in my lifetime. But they're not your average ordinary people meet the Feebles. 1989, Peter Jackson's second film after Bad Taste. Then he'd go on to direct Dead Alive. And then, of course, everybody knows The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit movies. So Peter Jackson, very much similar to Sam Raimi, started off in his horror roots, his cult roots, these nasty, gory, you know, energetic roots that I absolutely adore, right? Don Coscarelli could be thrown in there too, you know. He never got the highs or the fame that Sam Raimi and Peter Jackson got, but he should have. I think that those three are cut from the same cloth, just young filmmakers in their 20s making these crazy movies. So Peter Jackson, of course, New Zealand. This is his second film, and this is one of the most outrageous, disgusting films ever made. Muppets on Acid, some people call it. So essentially it's in a world where basically everybody's Muppets. But like the real world, there's a lot of nasty, crazy stuff. And basically the whole movie takes place on the Feebles Variety Hour, where the lead actress in this is Heidi the Hippo, and she is depressed and overweight, and her boyfriend Blelch, who's a walrus, is cheating on her. At the same time, he's selling drugs, he's screwing the other actress, the cat. And there's all sorts of cast of characters that are completely crazy. There's drug deals, there's pornographic, there's sex tapes, there's porns being filmed, there's acid flashback, well, the flashback, Vietnam flashbacks from frogs. You know, there's all sorts of crazy stuff. Nasty fly reporter. This is one of the most insane, quotable, on PC, fun, crazy, nasty cult movies ever made. This is one of my personal favorite movies, Meet the Feebles. I've loved it since I was 12. I showed all my friends. They got sick. They fell in love with it themselves. This is a movie that I think is just endlessly quotable and disgusting. All the characters are super memorable, and you see those Peter Jacksonisms pop up, like the bums cheering on fights. You see it in Dead Alive. You see even some of his later movies too. And then there's also this brilliance of like this cute character named Robot, and he's just the hedgehog, and he falls in love with Lucille the dog. And there's this love story at the backdrop, and he has this amazing song, and it's also a musical, really, because there's so many songs performed on there. Under the light of the Spanish moon, Lucy. I've seen this movie a million times, but I the end climax, which is just insane, which involves a shooting spree, a killing spree, with the backdrop of a song called Sodomy. I cannot make this shit up. But it is completely, it parodies like stuff like The Deer Hunter and things. And like a lot of, this is not going to, it goes without saying. People are like, this movie couldn't fly today. We all know it's a product of its time. It's very on PC, you know, it's very insane. I just wish that it would get a Blu-ray, because it's probably, this Dead Alive and Bad Taste are just these three great movies by Peter Jackson that are just insane. And two of them have a love story, you know. And I feel like I just would love people to finally see Meet the Feebles. Because it's probably the less seen out of the three. But it's my personal favorite Peter Jackson movie. Always will be. I've always had a soft spot for it. There's so many gross out moments. There's so many quotable moments. This is one of these movies where the shit gets quoted in your head. You have black cherry forest cake in your cleavage. I love this movie. It's so many good things. And it's really mean-spirited. It's so damn mean-spirited to the point. It's such a dark comedy. It's a musical. It's all puppets. And I remember a lot of times, you know, people would always be like, this is the Dead Alive release. Yeah. Dead Alive production. People would always be like, this to Dustin because he made Puppet Master Massacre as his first movie. You must really like Meet the Feebles. He's like, not really. The movie always grossed him out. I don't know if he's watched it in years, but it is very gross. One time I showed one of my best friends when we were young, I showed him Meet the Feebles. And he was supposed to stay the night. And he was like, man, I got to go home. I do not feel good after that. He was sick. He got sick from Meet the Feebles. The next day, he came back and was like, I want to watch that movie. Or next week, he's like, I got to finish. I got to prove myself. And he loved it. But no, this is a crazy movie. One of my all-time favorites. And I would highly recommend checking out Meet the Feebles. If you've never seen it, find it. Love it. Show your family, your friends, your little brother, your little sister, your baby nephew. Show them Meet the Feebles. They need it in their life. They need it. They got to have it. They're not your ordinary average people. Meet the Feebles. All right, let's get into those 1981 movies.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
A curse that'll live on and on, and no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago, and no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
Okay, the first one up on 1981 is a Thailand movie called Ghost Money. That's right. None of these ghosts get all this money. I ain't got no fucking money. This ghost got all the money. But okay, so Ghost Money. Okay, this is a strange one. It's kind of a longer film, about 2 hours long. And this is one that I was like, oh, this, the picture quality looks great. It's in HD. I don't know where the master. I'd like to see a release of it. I was entertained by it. So essentially what we have here is this really kind of bizarre story of this guy. We kind of get this flash of who he is and everything like that. It's kind of mysterious circumstances how he dies. We kind of follow these three kids, one of which, kind of this main kid who lives with his drunk father and his sister, and then like he lives with his stepmom and her son, and the stepmom and her son are just kind of trashy, not very good, and his father's a drunk, so it's not really a great home life. So him and his two friends, they have no money, one of which is like this kind of overweight kid who's always whining and scared of everything. It reminds me of the Goonies, even though it's before the Goonies. So essentially they realize the way to make money is to go rob graves. So they start digging up these bodies and taking coins out of their mouth and all these kind of things, and at first they have snacks and treats, and they run out of a lot of money at times, and then they decide to open this one body. And this is the body that we saw in the beginning of the film. And he's just not the person you want to do this to. So they take his money and he rises. And we've seen this kind of stuff happen. And what was that one? Grave robbers from Vinegar Syndrome put that out. The one, you know, the Ruben Galindo movie, where, you know, you rob them and then zombies come back. It's very typical, right? So they rob this guy and he comes back and he starts to haunt them. And he goes after everybody who has the gold pieces or has his treasure. It's like a leprechaun, right? But that's very typical, too. So he's going after everybody. And it hits the point where it's comedy. It has a lot of comedy in it and silliness and follows kids. So it's a kid's movie. One of the kids dies, and I'm just like, oh, shit. And, like, the poor heavyweight kid, his hands get all messed up, and he keeps making him try to it's got a lot of cool stuff about it, a lot of hauntings, and, of course, it focuses on, you know, the people who stole the gold. This is overall pretty solid, you know, nice little ghost story, kind of darker than you would think, goofier than you would think, as goofy as you'd think, but a little darker than that. So I'd recommend checking out Ghost Money. I enjoyed it. A little long, but, you know, I didn't really wear out its welcome. There's a lot of these, you know, Indian kind of movies or stuff like that that you watch and you're just like, 2.5 hours, that's a bit much. But this one, you know, I think that the runtime was a little bit easier to swallow in about the 2 hour thing. And there's not too many Thailand horror movies from this year. I believe this is from Thailand. And so I definitely would want to see some more of them. And as I go into the 80s more and more, we'll see all these different years and these other countries come in, because right now I'm noticing a lot of Indonesian horror films coming in from 81. There was a lot of them. So, you know, and I think I got most of those done, unless they don't have subtitles, and I'll talk about that later if I'm going to try to do AI subtitles on a lot of these. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But Ghost Money, pretty good. Okay, this next one, I'll be rather quick. This is called The Midnight, and I'm not 100% even sure where this one's from. I would say maybe Hong Kong, Taiwan, and this quality is absolute garbage. So, like, in the very... The quality's terrible. It drops out here and there. There's two versions I could have watched. Both look like shit in different ways. One's subtitles were cut off. One wasn't. Anyways, The Midnight, just... I can't give this movie that fair of a shake. In the opening, we have a brutal, like, three murder in this house. Some blood and gore in here. And you're like, oh, wow. And then, of course, this couple moves in. And it's your typical haunted house story. And right away, it seems to start really quick. Where you're like, is there, like, 10 minutes, 15 minutes cut out of this? Because we're not taking any time. The haunting stuff immediately starts happening. And after that, I kind of was just like thrown for a loop and giving a shit, because the quality was dipping and all these kind of things like that. So overall, it's just kind of your haunted ghost story. It's not necessarily great. It was just kind of a slog to get through because the picture quality and these dropouts and all these kind of things like this. So in honesty, like, I'm getting down to the nitty gritty where I'm watching, you know, movies that are complete, but the quality is so poor and it's just not necessarily up to the caliber to even watch or read the subtitles. But in the opening, like I said, it's a fairly harsh murder, some gore, and then it gets a little goofier and sillier and turns into your typical, we're moving into this haunted house. And I believe this is the one that lifted actual music from Poltergeist, which is weird because this is made in 81, but it probably wasn't really released widely until like 82, 83. So maybe this is like not the original cut, period. Maybe it's just like, we're going to take this movie, add all these different soundtracks in for the, you know, the Hong Kong market or the British and American market or whatever, you know what I mean? Like the VCD, they add in their own music. If you've ever noticed that, a lot of these old movies, you'll hear like songs lifted directly off bigger movies or just like weird kind of mixes of popular songs. So The Midnight, I can't recommend this. I could barely see what the fuck was happening, so how can you blame me, right? Eh? Now, I'm going to be very brief with this one because this is a strange story here. So I want to make sure I get this right. This one is called Night Evil Soul. But this is really weird because technically this is the Hong Kong version of Grudge of the Moon Lady in China. So here we go, right? Night Evil Soul was released in 81. It is a dubbed version. It's dubbed in Mandarin from a Korean movie, which was released in 1980, which I watched. Grudge of the Moon Lady. So here's what we're doing. We have two different listings of this movie on Internet Movie Database, on Letterboxd, everywhere. Everywhere this is listed as two different fucking movies. Everybody says it's two different movies. It's not. So we have the original Korean version, which you can watch. It's cut. You can watch about a 68-minute version of a 90-minute movie with no subtitles in HD. You can find the Korean version. I didn't watch that in 1980. I watched the Hong Kong version, not knowing any better. So when I go to watch this movie, and the covers are the same, like, it looks very familiar. I start watching it. I'm about 30, 40 minutes in. I'm like, I think I've seen this. I know this. And the story basically follows this old kind of witch lady who, in a village with her cat, is murdered by the villagers. And she puts a curse on there, comes back with her and her cat, and they kills a bunch of the villagers. Then they burn her body. Years later, someone else is wronged, and this witch woman enters her body to get revenge with the cat. That's kind of the plot. At the very end, we have this big kind of showdown of wind and these kind of like whimsy kind of things fighting. And it seems Hong Kong at times, but then you register the whole cat kind of angle, the whole way the ghost looks. You're like, this feels more Korean, Japanese. Although, I think Devil Cat was from 1980, and I think that was Taiwan or Hong Kong as well. So, like, it's kind of hard to pinpoint these kind of different kind of myths and things like that. It also feels very similar to the two Japanese stories that I talked about earlier about the oldest ghost story in Japan, where we have the person being hired, right, to kill the father and this woman so that the other woman can marry the husband. So like it has that angle in here as well. So it's like that's very not, you know, Hong Kong or Chinese. That's more of a Japanese thing. So like it's such a weird mixture. So Night Evil Soul is essentially the same movie of Grudge of the Moon Lady. They're the same film, just different dubs. Reason why they have two listings? Who the hell knows? Nobody knows any better. Maybe the original Korean version was completely different. I do not know. It's very hard to say. But regardless, the quality is terrible as well. So that doesn't help. But overall, I like the cat is cool. The evil, like, growling cat. I like the background, the story. This is one where I would really like to see a cleaned up version. It could help. And maybe some context to this, you know? There's so many movies that don't have much of a history that people don't really talk about, that people don't really know much about. Especially Americans, looking at it on the outside perspective, I don't have, you know, all these things at my fingertips to be like, hey, somebody in Korea who is alive in 1980 that knew about horror films, or somebody in Hong Kong, or whatever, you know what I mean? I just don't have access to that, and that's not really public information. This takes experts, people that probably don't know, you know, a lot of them are probably dead or don't care, all this kind of shit, right? I'm sure some people do know it, but it's just weird. It's just very strange to think that there's so much information that's definitely never going to get passed on to anybody. But Night Evil Soul, it's worth a look. Like I said, it's a mess of the history, I guess, you know. Okay, we're gonna do the Patreon pick, and this is Where the Crawdads Sing. And now I'd heard a little bit about it. I know it was like a best-selling book, and that's about it. And I know that a lot of people were taking, like, their family, their husband and wife were going on to it. And there's a big love story in here. So this is a movie that kind of is narrated by this kind of, like, you know, southern kind of woman. And she's talking about everything. She starts off very young, has this really horrible, tragic life where the kind of thing is everybody leaves her in her life. She's left alone. So basically, she's left alone after everything happens. They explain everything. They call her Swamp Girl. She's isolated. She's an outsider. She's not very well liked by the town. And a young man starts to kind of have a fondness for her. They fall in love, and this basically and we go on and we cut to a courtroom. Halfway through the movie, we're going courtroom to past, and we're having these two kind of linear story lines going on, and we know they're gonna come together at the very end for, you know, a nice little kind of you know, I guess, resolution. So the courtroom stuff is decent. It's solid. It's weird because, like, a lot of these movies, when they do, like, the southern kind of thing and the narration, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I really don't think it worked in the one movie that Netflix had with the great cast with Robert Pattinson and everything, but that was the writer of that book doing the narration, and he's just not an actor, and that movie just was so on the nose. This one is a little on the nose as well, I would say, but I enjoyed this one a little bit more. And, you know, it feels like that movie meets The Notebook, which is very funny. It's like a murder mystery with The Notebook. That's kind of what the storyline is having here. But, yeah, there's just, like, tragedy. tragedy after tragedy, and of course, like, we have this love story at the middle of it. And it is a mystery, too. So you have the murder mystery, which keeps a lot of other people intrigued, right? It kept me intrigued to figure out exactly how it happened. And the lawyer in here is a really good actor. He pops up in, Nightmare Alley, the Del Toro one. He's also in The River Run Wild with Kevin Bacon. He plays the father. I can't think of the actor's name. He's a very good actor. He's good in this. And, you know, overall, this is a solid film. I enjoyed it. I don't know if I would revisit too much, but I did like it, and I did think it was decent. It does have kind of a weird quality to it. Like, you know, it's like based off a book, and it's like the first of that. So it's like kind of cheap. It's weird. It's like not cheap, but cheap. Kind of like the first Twilight movie, which I unfortunately have seen. It's cheap, but it's not cheap. Does that make any sense? Like, they don't want to take the chance to put too much money into it, but they're going to put some money into it. So it seems like it's like not Hollywood, but kind of Hollywood. But overall, I thought it was solid. I didn't hate it. I don't know how much I'll revisit it, but for a love story that's like a kind of a movie that I guess a husband and wife could go to, I would say it's all right. So Where the Crawdads Sing. Good stuff, I guess, you know, if you're into it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. I like it. It's fine. All right, let's do these questions and comments, concerns, all that jazz. Ken Coakley, I am so jealous you have a Horrors of the Black Museum from VCI. They're looking good as of late with their commitment to Mexican horror. I hope they get the rights to the Mexican movies that Casa Negra released on DVD years ago. I thought those films were going away, but Indicator released a box set with a few titles from the Casa Negra. VCI also released in 1959's children's film Santa Claus, which was also made in Mexico and was directed by Rene Cardona. Which one? There's three of them. Santa was played by Jose Elias Moreno from Night of the Bloody Apes. VCI also does great cover art. The Black Museum cover looks great, especially with Hypnovision logo. As for The Mist, I read it when the book first came out. I used to buy Stephen King books on the day they were released. A lot of fans didn't like the story, but I disagree. I thought it was action-packed. There was also an audio drama with 3D sound. I didn't hear it, though. The movie took a while for me to like it. I was put off by the crazy Christian lady character, but it's cool to see some Frank Darabont usual actors. He has worked quite a lot with Jeffrey DeMunn and Lurie Holden. One of my favorite films they did together was The Majestic. I strongly recommend it, especially for older people such as myself who have a favorite theater in their childhood that no longer exists. Also, Bruce Campbell has a cameo. Very nice. Yeah, I mean, Stephen King always has that character, right? The crazy kind of over-religious Christian characters so much, especially in his film adaptations. Like, you look at like a lot of that stuff, it always pops up in there. Gary Nunez, Smiley, gives me a smiley face. Stephen Hyde gives me muscle and heart. Thank you. Tempura Boto gives me goat turquoise horns. Thank you. It's just basically a picture, but it said it. Nick Mua from Belgium. Good to hear that Horrors of the Black Museum has gotten a new release. I like the old Network on Air release. May the company rest in peace. This one seems like an upgrade. I just might have to acquire it again, but who doesn't love Michael Goth being nasty in HD? Questions. Is there a home media company that went tits up, as they say, that you miss terribly? I miss the old school Anchor Bay. I remember when Anchor Bay used to release some great stuff. I don't even know if they're still around anymore. So let's go when Anchor Bay closed it up. But probably Anchor Bay. I mean, they didn't really close it up, but they sure as hell changed a lot, enough to close it up. If you had your own home media release company, which content would you release the most, or even exclusively? Low budget, mid budget, zombies, slashers, whatever I really loved that I felt, or I would focus on, you know, Japanese direct to video movies, like the Hisayasu Sato or something like that. You've made movies where, were there movies you would watch before shooting started? Mike Flanagan likes to watch A Changeling before he begins shooting, apparently. Not really, no. No time. You're stressed out. Even in my low-budget movies, stressed out. I hope you've recovered completely health-wise, though. You may consider cloning yourself or constructing Android version of yourself. Seriously, though, take care until later, God willing. Thank you. Explosive Action, thanks for taking the bullet on the Franco. The cheapo ones from MVD haven't compelled me to buy them yet. I think Severn picked the better films from his filmography. I do. But, you know, Blue Underground's putting out a lot of good ones. And I will let you know if any of the MVD ones are great, you know. John Rand, 6015. I'm able to buy about 3 bouquet labels at boutique Blu-rays a year if it's a good year. I really hate how much I miss out. I feel you, man. Zombie, even though I buy a lot, but still can't buy it all. Zombie Adams, Corruption is an absolute classic for me, same as his other hardcore stuff. And Kadum 1472, Michael Gow is an absolute delight in Horrors in the Museum. Incarnate, I really like his performance in Satan's Slave, so good in that. And Smudge, The Mist is my favorite horror film of the 21st century. I mean, The Mist is great. I could watch The Mist anytime. But you know what? We're going to do the Patreon pick here if I didn't knock this thing on the ground. 5 titles. Where did I put it? I know it's on here somewhere. Here it is. Probably pull these off. Okay, so 5 titles right here. Then we're going to hop into the update afterwards. Let's see. What are my Patreon picks going to be? What do we got here? John Wilhelm, Exist, 2014. Never liked this movie. Gonna give it another shot. like the director, don't like that movie. It's crazy, right? Eau Claire, Narnia. Now, is that Chronicles of Narnia? I don't know. We'll see. What else do we got? Tyler Taddeo, Exotica, 1994. That's another one. That's three. Tom Brooker, Extro, the Mutilator. And then next one coming up is going to be the last one here. And this is Night of the Hunter. Rob put it in. Gotta love Night of the Hunter. Classic movie. Robert Mitchum. But, yeah, hope that's the Robert Mitchum one you're talking about. Anyways, let's get into this update. All right, let's get into this update. First up is a simple one. Cheap. Nope. 4K. Really enjoyed this when it came out. Not my favorite Jordan Peele, but I liked it. For $10, I figured I'd watch it in 4K again. Not a bad price. They got part of a Kino order. I did have another Kino order, but they lost it, and the communication's been kind of poor, I guess. I'm just not being patient, I guess, but still. Customer service, they only got two guys, I guess. It's not great. But the new Godfather's here, Raro Pictures here. So pick that up. Eurocrime, Polizia Tetsi, Alfonso Bresnia, who I've seen a couple horror films, I think, by that guy. Then we have Magnum Cop here. We have Stefano Masi, Polizia Tetsi. Yeah, that's right. It looks like, of course, Maurizio Merli in here and Joan Collins. Very cool. Good price on this. Gotta love their sales. I mean, Kino's so busy, so I'm not gonna hold it against them. If they make it right, it's no big deal. Shit takes time, right? We have Kamikaze here. This Luc Besson. This looks bizarre. I don't know if he directed this one or just produced it, but this looks like a bizarre film. Looks pretty cool. So, then of course we have their new cult line. They got the first three on here. We got Lorna the Exorcist, a film by Jess Franco. Of course, Lino Romay. Gotta love that. Gotta love Jess Franco. That's right. Then we have... That's the Alien Outlaw from 1985. Lash LaRue. Right? This was Film Smoot directed this. He did two movies from this year, and the other one they have too. From 4K restoration. That's insane for this movie. This movie is super cheesy sci-fi movie. They got 86 for this one. And the next one here is Dark Power, which is like Native American kind of Indians or ghosts coming back. This one's okay. I remember liking it. Not a perfect movie, but entertaining nonetheless. Directed by Film Smoot as well. Those are the Kino cults. Then we're going to hop into some other ones here. We got Fright Night in 4K Steelbook. I was hoping for a regular release. I'm not the biggest fan of Steelbooks, but I just couldn't wait any longer for Fright Night on 4K. Fright Night. Gotta love Fright Night. 85. Then we have an umbrella here. We have Twisted Nerve. I imported this. I got it from Deep Discount. Got a good price on it. Always wanted to see this. Never seen it. 1968. Obviously, the score was used in Kill Bill. But yeah, this movie's supposed to be excellent. I'm looking forward to checking that out. Been wanting to see it for years. Then we have Zombie Ass, Toilet of the Dead. That's right, from Media Blasters. Zombie Ass, Toilet of the Dead. Sure it's a winner? I sure thought, though. Then we have one from EGFA. This is Shredder. What is this? Shredder or Fifius? I'm not sure how to say that. It's one of those words that if I hear it pronounced out loud, I'll sound stupid for mispronouncing it. It's Skate Rock Adventure of the Deadly Kind. I think I have a VHS of this. This is one of these movies that I've seen a million times just around, and I never seen it. So, curious. A big skate craze back in the day. This one interested me. This is from Dark Star, and I don't buy a lot of the contemporary stuff anymore, but Pig Killer. And this is based on Willie Picton, which is a fucked up story. Serial killer from Canada. Horribly gross, crazy story. So I don't know if this is going to be... Chad Farron directed it, too. Chad Farron did a movie called Parasites, which I really liked, with Joe Pilato in it. And he also did one called Unspeakable years ago that Troma put out. So that's interesting. I didn't know he did it. So Killing of Bobby Green. This is Saturn's Core. And I've been collecting their line. This looks kind of interesting. I do kind of like what they're doing here. Saturn's Core is pretty cool stuff. And then what else do we got here? We got, this massive box set from Vinegar Syndrome. I'll save that for the end. But now, right now, we got Existence from David Cronenberg. Is this 4K of Existence? I think it is. But Existence is a really unique, kind of cool movie from Cronenberg. Weird one. Yeah. Good one. Good one, though, too. Underrated, I think. Underrated in Cronenberg's kind of his films, filmography. You know, I mean, he's got so many good movies that often a couple of them do get overlooked. One of my personal favorites will always be Rabid. I know that's not like one of the most popular ones, but I just have a real soft spot for Rabid. Then we have the Prophecy movies here, 1, 2, and 3. And I've seen these years ago, and I remember liking them. It's been a while, you know. I mean, it's been a long time. Been a long time since a rock and roll. But, yeah, so awesome, all three of them. They got a deal. 4Ks, too. That's crazy, man. The first one's really good, and the second one was, and third one I both remember being good, too. So, yeah. Is it just the first one in 4K? Or no? I think all three of them are on 4K. What a crazy world we live in, that Vinegar Syndrome is now. It's so funny, right? When I remember when they first were out there at, like, Cinema Wasteland, seeing them have a table, and they'd be doing, like, these double feature horror and, like, kind of films and sometimes porns. And now they're just sitting here releasing The Prophecy, which is great to see them come far along. The Black Room, which is a solid horror film. Linnea Quigley, Christopher McDonald. I have seen this once, but the picture quality was so crap. And I remember liking it. But yeah, so now we have this in freaking Blu-ray. It's so weird, man. All the movies, they're just making things happen that you don't expect to happen. Untold Story 2. Those who do not love me deserve to suffer. Not as good as the first, not quite, but still good. And of course, Anthony Wong is in this one as well. I enjoy this one. It's a good movie. The third one I've never seen. I like the second one, though. And then Herman Yao, he did not direct this one. No, I didn't think so. Would have remembered that. And then we have Adarla. I've never actually seen this. I remember seeing this fucking cover a million times. And this is one of the weird Vinegar Syndrome releases. This thing is fucking amazingly huge. This is a weird one. Sometimes they put out these bizarre kids movies, right? This is a Paramount. So they're doing a lot of Paramount stuff. 4K of this. Maybe I'll have, like, my nephews over and I'll watch this and just fall asleep and they can enjoy it. I'm just kidding, though. I'm sure I'll like this, you know? I don't know if I've ever seen this one. It's a lot of weird stuff. Like, when you're a kid, you see a lot of movies, but then, like, you don't remember them. Or you just, like, forget completely and then you go to watch them. Like, oh, I've seen this. And you just, like, have fond memories and everything like that. And then we got right here, we got Redneck Zombies. I love this movie. It's a favorite SOV of mine. This is their new label, Vinegar Syndrome, where they're doing, like, SOV stuff. Tobacco Man, Daddy, Tobacco Man. I've seen this movie a million fucking times. This is another one in the vein of Meet the Feebles that I used to show my friends and just make them sick. That's just my MO, I guess. So this one right here, now we have this Vinegar Syndrome Lost Picture Show, which is 10 fucking movies that were never released or lost. This is insane. Guys, I don't even know what to put in here, but look at it. It's just massive. I can't show you everything. So we got books and everything. I'm not even going to show you that because I'm going to get in trouble, but you got 5 movies in each set. Beware Black Widow, Deep Inside, Rare Blue Apes, Red Midnight, Violated. Boy, oh boy. Crazy. And then the other one, what do we have here? We got another book. Just so much cool stuff. We got Jesus on there. Got a friend in Jesus. Got Barbara, Las Vegas Strangler, Last American Hobos, Voodoo Heartbeat, and What's Love. So, wow. This is such a cool set, man. Super weird. And I think that's all I got. So, yeah, let's get back to the video. All right, guys. Thank you very much for watching. And as always, have a good one.